Welcome to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129. If you want to listen to more, subscribe to SiriusXM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern on the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.
Welcome back. You're listening to America This Week. I'm Carrie Weber, Executive Editor for America, and I am joined by Father Matt Malone, our Editor-in-Chief, and Antonio De La Vera Brust, one of our Joseph A. O'Hare Fellows at America. And we are speaking with another one of our own, senior editor, J.D. Long Garcia. He came to us from the Angelus out of Los Angeles, and prior to that, the Catholic Sun, the newspaper of the Diocese of Phoenix. So welcome to the show, J.D.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
We are really glad to have you. Now, you have written a piece called What Life is Like on the U.S.-Mexico Border, which can be found, like the other pieces, at americanmagazine.org/serious. And you went to the border to tell this story. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Sure. Yeah, it was a real blessing to be able to spend that much time working on this piece. And you can read it online. And you can also read it in print. It's kind of a long piece, you know. But it was a real blessing to. But I've been doing a lot of reporting on the border throughout my career for the last 15 years. And so to go back to some of these places and revisit in the context of the current political climate, and to really get an update of what life is like down on the border. It was a real blessing, especially to go back and see how much of the border already had some sort of a barrier set up, which I think is something that's not very well understood.
Right. Well, I think that's one of the lovely things about your piece, is that you really are able to describe that how much life is on the border, right? How many people come to the border, cross the border, and do so on a daily basis. It's not just a place kind of peril, but also of joy, which and hope in some ways that I found really fascinating.
Yeah, it's funny just listening to your conversation before about the Pope's apostolic exhortation. I think that there's something about the way that Latinos live their faith that it's very much every day, and the image of Our Lady of Guadalupe is everywhere. And it's around, people wear it around their necks and everything. And so, but also there's this celebration. I think the encuentro, the quinto encuentro that we're going through right now also recognizes that the Latinos are a people that celebrate. And there's joy in that. So then, excuse me, on the border, there's towns that used to be one town, and then they built a wall between that town, and the other thing I think is important to recognize is that much of the Southwest used to be part of Mexico,
right.
And so there's people that lived there at one time that, one day they were Mexican, and then the next day they were, American or U.S. citizens or whatever. And they didn't move, but the border did. So that's definitely still there. You can still recognize how there's a continuity between these border towns, like in Ciudad Juarez and El Paso. You have, people have families on both sides of the border.
So what was the thing that had changed the most in the years between your penultimate visit and this visit?
That's a great question. It's difficult to identify. I think that there's a lot of what I would describe as anti-immigrant sentiment in our political discourse that's resonating a lot with people there. Over the last 15 years,
it's like registering in their consciousness.
Yeah. I think there's a fear there. I spoke with some people who had been in the process of being deported. They were detained 7 months or more. And that's a long time just to wait to be deported. That seems to be something that's happening systematically, where they're being detained for more time to make it more of a punishment. But there's also the kinds of immigrants, if I could say it that way, they're from the countries of origins have changed over that period of time, where there's a lot more from Central America today. And with the improving economy in Mexico, fewer Mexican immigrants were coming. Those are some things. There's also a lot more being done on the humanitarian front, which is very encouraging. There's a lot of outreach that's being done for migrants there, and that's grown over the years, especially in Tijuana.
You described a number of these ministries, really, that are set up in really fascinating ways for people who are deported, back to Mexico and are trying to maybe set up a life there, or people who are being ministered to on either side. So can you tell us a bit about how these organizations work and what their sort of mission is and who they serve?
Yeah, there's a number of them. I went to the Desayunador Padre Java in Tijuana, and they like the name indicates, they have breakfast there. Every day they have breakfast, and they serve 800 to 1,000 people every day, which is really amazing.
Those people are coming from where?
They're deported, either recently deported or that means they don't have a place to have breakfast, so they come. So there's people in Tijuana. If you can imagine, for the person who spends, in many cases, their life savings or more than their life savings to try to make it to the United States, and then they're deported, and that's kind of a hopeless situation. So unfortunately, a lot of them end up turning to drugs, and so there's also an outreach for them there. And then along with breakfast, you know, it's kind of like, it's a little bit like some of our in ministry with our teen programs. You offer people food, and then you can do more for them, you know. So they show up for the pizza, and then, you know, you get a little catechism too. But so then they show up for breakfast, and then, you know, they help them get jobs, and they give them counseling. Maybe you can get like a haircut there, and lots of things that really restored their dignity, a dignity that's been stripped away from them in a way. Not actually, but, you know, right, the way they've been treated.
What do you think is the biggest misperception about what's happening? The thing that you would want our listeners who may be in Chicago to know about this story?
Well, I think that just to see everyone as individuals, I think that that's might may be too simple to say, but the way that we speak in broad categories about human beings, and that they're all this way or that way or the other way, I think there's this you know, if I could say, this bad hombre idea, yeah, that the people who are coming here are up to no good. It's false. And when you listen to the people and you listen to their stories and what's motivating them, that really does break it down. And I think that just the other idea is that people are coming here in order to live off the system is completely wrong also. Something that's said very often, but not, unfortunately, not in our political sphere, is that people have a right not to migrate also, so that they would want to, these people really want to stay home. They love their country. They love their culture. They love their language. And they don't want to come to the United States. The situation that's, in a sense, squeezing them out, it's terrible.
Right.
And go ahead.
I was going to say, and the United States really much actually depends on them, right? I mean, we were just talking about American agriculture, and American agriculture would absolutely collapse without immigrants who continue to do most of the hard work.
Right.
There are a lot of really nice sort of personal stories of people that really humanize this whole experience in the piece. And one that really struck me was of a gentleman who was living with his family, with his wife and his daughter, I believe, up in Seattle, Washington, and who had been deported, and who was just kind of like coming to the border to like look over into the land where his wife and daughter were. And it's just so heartbreaking to think about, because they had gone down with him to, is it Tijuana, I think, where he was living? Or wherever they were, and tried, because I think a lot of people say like, oh, well, just, you should all go together then, stay as a family. But it was too dangerous, right? It was too dangerous for her and for their child. And they had to go back to the U.S. They were U.S. citizens. And it's just so heartbreaking to hear stories like that where, you know, families really, really are being torn apart. And it's not just, you know, oh, a logistical, like, oh, it would be too hard to move down. They tried this, and it doesn't work.
Yeah, there's in Tijuana, you can see the barrier. I used to call it a wall until apparently we need a new one, I guess. But right. It looks pretty big and insurmountable. But it goes straight into the Pacific Ocean there, so it's, you know, even difficult to swim around it. So it's,
how far out does it go?
I mean, I'm not really good at distances. I would say maybe 50.
Yeah, it goes out, I'd say, maybe over 50 yards. Wow. And there's signs there that say obstacles under the water too. So. Mm-hmm. And Border Patrol patrols the beaches in Southern California, mm-hmm, quite a ways up too. So it's not easily crossable.
Yeah, and that's another place where, I mean, on the U.S. side, there used to be a place where people would sunbathe right on the other side. Now that's completely shut down, and it's empty space for the most part. But so I went down there to see people and to sort of see what life was like. And then, you know, I saw these some younger girls taking selfies with the border in the background. And then this gentleman, Jesus, walked up, and he was barefoot, and he walked up to the border, and you know, something different was going on. And you know, introvert me is like, oh boy, I'm gonna need to talk to this guy. So you know, what do you say? Like, you know. It seems like intrusive, but right. He was very happy to talk to me and tell me, share a story with me, and his photos in our in the current issue and online. But just about just that, what you were saying, Carrie, that you know he was in Seattle, Washington, and he was deported, and his family came with him, and including his newborn at that time was 6 months old, and he hasn't seen her. In months, and he was sort of looking over the border and said, you know, I think that trying to cross, even if I lose my life, would be better than being separated from my family.
Right.
And it was just heartbreaking for, you know, if you're a father, wherever you're from, and to be separated from your child like that. I mean, you can really understand that. And in his case, what he told me wasn't that it was a serious criminal offense. It was that that he was in the country without papers.
Right.
So it isn't that he broke like a another kind of, you know, I don't know. I don't know. There's a hierarchy of law breaking or whatever. But for the most part, it used to be that people in that situation weren't deported.
Right. He was leading, you know, like a law abiding life in the U.S. Other than the way he had gotten there.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, if we're going to change the conversation around this, it's so important to humanize it, as you say, and to personalize it, to give people a sense that there are individuals, there are families, there are real human beings behind these statistics, behind this debate. So I also think that we have to find ways, those of us who, you know, are in lockstep with the church on this issue, need to find ways to reach people who are moderate on this question and try to bring them to a different way of seeing it. So I guess what I have in mind here is, and I know these people, I'm sure you know some of these folks too, that the person who, you know, doesn't buy into the craziness of the rhetoric and all of that, but is a reasonable person, doesn't understand themselves to be xenophobic in some way, and says, well, you know, immigration is okay, but why can't we have a wall? And why can't people come here legally, and we do it in an orderly way? How do we respond to that?
I mean, I think, you know, the church teaches that nations have a right to secure their borders, but I think that, you know, children have a right to their parents too, and our current immigration laws just don't recognize that right. And for, you know, really millions of people in the United States are living in a state of absolute fear, and they don't have an opportunity to try to rectify their situation or to seek legal status and a path to citizenship. And that is the core, the kind of the foundational injustice that leads to all these individual tragedies. And until we reckon with that problem, an enforcement-based approach is only going to cause more pain. And I think, you know, there are people who are reasonable who disagree, but I think that really, as you mentioned, emphasizing the real individual cost and the real individual cost to Americans, right? It's U.S. behind the story of this man in Tijuana who misses his daughter. There's an American girl in Washington who misses her father.
Right.
So I think that, you know, we have to question what are our obligations to those people as U.S. citizens.
So what you're saying is, if we can imagine that person again, you might be saying to them, you know, to focus almost, you know, so dramatically on border security is to focus on the wrong solution to the wrong problem.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we're also much less open these days to, you know, asylum seekers and refugees, people who are coming illegally, yes, but because they are in literal mortal danger elsewhere, right? Their lives have perhaps been completely, like, undone where they are. Their neighborhoods might be dangerous. Some people have to, you know, pay gangs to go in and out of their own neighborhoods, right? And they're looking for a different life. And the UN, right, has in their Convention on Refugees, has prohibited asylum seekers from being detained just simply for seeking asylum. And I'm not sure we're even really abiding by that. So I think what some people, I'm not sure what we're doing as sort of a daily basis as a nation is really within that sort of reasonable element anymore. It's really going to an extreme level where people who are coming for asylum as refugees are being turned away, and they really have a right, as declared by the UN, to come here and to try to stay.
And what if the, and but what if this person says, but isn't there already some kind of fencing along the border? I mean, there's already something that separates, right? So why not make it better? Why not have a wall?
Yeah, I think that the barrier, someone who I interviewed actually said as much, as that it's what the barrier represents, a division between peoples, and to strengthen that division, it's unreal. Basically, it's an illusion, because we're connected. Mm-hmm. I mean, the global economy is connected. We're connected to Mexico. We're connected as the Americas. And the other thing I would say, in addition to, this is something that Father Malone, you've mentioned in your writing, and Antonio, you've mentioned in yours too, is just like the great gift of people that come to this country.
Yeah.
Like we see it as a negative thing, and this is a burden to this country. But people have been coming to this country from other places for the entire history of this of the United States. So, and this is it's a
blessing.
And what
an indispensable part of the economy they are at a practical level.
That's right.
To Antonio's point.
Yeah, and I think as Catholics, I mean, this is something to celebrate. Because they're bringing, these are people that have our values, you mm-hmm. know, that are coming here, and these are Christians that are coming to partake in who we are as a society, and to continue, if I can call it an evolution, but we've always changed and developed with time, and they're coming to contribute there, and I think it's something to be celebrated, not something to be feared.
And I think the wall underestimates the drive of people who are in a desperate situation and need to get out, particularly people acting on behalf of their children or behalf of their family. Walls can't stop them, right? I think in that respect, it's ineffective, because. Mm-hmm. If there's a wall, there will come a different way, right? So it's a huge amount of resources that could be put into either helping nation build in the countries where people need help, or helping establish lives for people here in the U.S., or helping with poverty, or whatever, anything that is going into a wall that in the end is a terrible symbol of our nation and is probably largely ineffective.
I think that that's a very compelling way of talking about it in my mind. And because it seems to me that, yes, it's the wrong solution to the wrong problem. Yes, it's an enormous waste of resources. But its symbolic value is really destructive of comedy and human relationships. And what's so interesting to me is that at the height of the Cold War in Berlin, we understood this symbol in exactly the opposite way, right? As something that did precisely what the way you described this wall, the way that you described this symbol functioning, right? That there shouldn't be a wall, and I mean, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall, right? Because it's separating families from one another, it's separating people from one another, it's literally, you know, dividing a town in half, like Nogales.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I was thinking along the same on that wavelength too. It's something that we celebrated in the United States when the Berlin Wall came down, and now we're building one up. Instead of, I think it would be a beautiful thing to be talking about, when are we going to tear the existing wall down between the U.S.-Mexico border, and really that would indicate where we are going as a nation. I think there's a fear. I mean, I also think we need to recognize that people who do believe that a wall should be built, and try to be in dialogue with them to try to better understand where they're coming from, and to set aside what fears might be driving that to be a wall to be built. But it's a barrier that we need to overcome in the United States.
In fact, if I were the president of Mexico, I would go there on the anniversary of Reagan's speech in Berlin, and I would say, Mr. Trump, tear down this wall.
I think Father Pat had a quote. Father Pat is someone you cite in the article, who I also met through my service in Tijuana, who runs this shelter for deportees in Tijuana. And he has, you quote him as saying, I worry more about the wall that Trump is creating around people's hearts than the physical barrier. And I think that, you know, as a practical thing, you know, no matter how tall you build a border wall, people will find a way. If people could get out of East Berlin, if people today can flee North Korea, there is no amount of troops or walls or barbed wire or even minefields that you can put that will overwhelm, you know, the pursuit of happiness, that constant human desire to seek better or to flee really terrible situations. But I really think it's the symbolism of it. You know, as a Mexican American, it's a real symbol of ugliness for me, in a way, where I see my country building a wall against my people. And I think there's a wound there that's not just at the border, that's within our church. You know, if you look at the 2016 Catholic vote, white Catholics went for Trump and Latino Catholics went for Clinton. So there is some healing that needs to happen, because I think that's there's a wall in, you know, between Spanish Mass and English Mass, in a way.
Right.
And that's why I think it's so important that the church be in the middle of this debate the way that it is, and leading the conversation about it, because we were talking earlier in the program about, you know, the importance of theological symbols in the public discourse. And, you know, this the Eucharist is precisely that which transcends borders, right? When Pope Francis was asked, are you going to visit the border when you go to Mexico? He said, what border? There is no border, right? God, in the eyes of God, there's no border here, right? And when I think of the Catholic bishops who gathered around the border and shared the Eucharist across the border, that those are really important moments where we see, as people of faith, what God intends. But even if you're not a person of faith, you get a glimpse of the, I would hope, the world that you would want to live in.
That's right. Yeah, and I think that the greater reality is that we are all the same. So we have, like, you know, there's no Gentile or Jew in heaven, and there's no Americans either. You know, we're all the same people when we're in communion with God.
Yeah, and one of the beautiful images of that, I think, is that Friendship Park, which you write about there, where people are allowed to visit with friends and family from across the border for increasingly short periods of time, it sounds like. But it sounds like one sort of point of physical reconciliation that's really beautiful.
Friendship Park's a really magical place, and it was intended to be kind of a park. It was First Lady Pat Nixon, actually, who had it built. And we had this place called Friendship Park for the two countries to meet, and then we built a wall through it. So how's that for a metaphor?
Speaking of symbols, what do you think? Is this wall really going to be built, do you think?
You know, when I was in Ciudad Juarez, I was with Father Mosier, and he's a Colombian priest and a great guy. He makes great coffee. I mentioned that too, because it was really great coffee. But anyway, but he mentioned a part of the wall. He sort of signaled to it as we were driving by, and he said, you know, oh, that we just finished building that part of the barrier right there. And it was part of a 2006 bill that President Bush had signed. And, you know, I mean, but it's 12 years ago, and we're still building it. So I don't think that it's going to happen. And if it is built, I think it'll just be built to be torn down. It does seem like it's more symbolic, both in political rhetoric and then in actuality as well.
Yeah. Well, the piece is called What Life is Like on the U.S.-Mexico Border. It's by America's senior editor, J.D. Long-Garcia. J.D., thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
You know who really understood this power of this symbol is Ronald Reagan. I mean, he was able to apply it both to Berlin and to the southern U.S. border. You know, he opposed building a wall on the southern U.S. border. And when he was running for president, he said, you know, rather than talking about building walls, why don't we talk about bringing people into this country and having them share in the freedom and prosperity that is America? Something has changed when Reagan starts sounding like a liberal. Right?
True.
Exactly.
Yeah. So we will continue, of course, to cover this story extensively and at americamagazine.org and in the pages of America. Last night, we launched a special initiative that's actually being overseen by JD, looking at the future of the church in the United States with a particular eye to how to integrate Hispanic, Latino Catholics more fully into ecclesial life. And that's a really important three-year initiative. Lots of content in our pages, on our website, events, and all the rest. And so people should check that out, the
you
Church
can
in America.
View the live stream of that on our site as well.
You can, along with 1,000 other people.
Yeah.
That which was amazing. Wonderful to lead a national conversation about that. You've been listening to America This Week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. To learn more about all of these issues, visit americamagazine.org/Sirius. You can also follow us on Facebook and on Twitter. And to subscribe to America, call 1-800-627-9533. That's 1-800-627-9533 for a smart Catholic take on faith and culture. For Carrie Weber, I'm Father Matt Malone. Thank you and good day.
Thank you for listening to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129. If you want to listen to more, subscribe to SiriusXM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern on the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.